Hello everyone, my name's Helen Cracknell and I'm a solicitor in the pensions team. Welcome to episode 4 of the Burgessan Pensions Pod. Previous episodes have looked at disclosing information to the regulator, getting prepared for the regulator's new powers, and how pensions law and charity law interacts. If any of that sounds of interest, be sure to look at our website.
And I'm Chris Brown, a director in the pensions team. In today's podcast, we will be discussing key trends in the current pensions landscape, with a particular focus on DC transfers to master trusts. Our guest today is Charlotte Osmond, a senior associate in our pensions team. Hello, Charlotte, who has particular recent experience of working on scheme design projects and buy-ins. Charlotte, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
Charlotte, what are the headline trends in the future of pensions?
So there are several key trends I thought it would be useful to talk to you about today. Firstly, on the defined benefit side, perhaps stating the obvious, but many schemes are working towards their end game. More and more schemes are choosing to close the future accrual, and many are deciding to buy in and wind up. And indeed, I have been working on a number of buy-in and wind-up projects in recent times. The regulator published a report last year which looked at some statistics behind the number of schemes, and this looked at about 5,600. And according to the report, 47% of schemes are closed to future accrual, 10% are open to new members, 40% are closed to new members, and 3% are in winding up. And this really interested me because I thought a lot more schemes would be closed to future accrual than there actually were. So yeah, that was very interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. But perhaps the schemes that are still open to accrual, there's only 10% you said open to new members. So there's, you know, definitely a maturing market. And of the mature schemes we're seeing, I think fair to say we're seeing lots of activity in the insurance market at the moment. Myself, late last year, I completed it was about a $45 million buy-in of a scheme's liabilities because the employer's overseas parent, it was a global group sponsor, wanted to contribute money to the UK pension scheme by the year end to effectively take pension UK pension scheme liabilities off its books. So we worked to an accelerated timescale to get the buy-in deal done by the end of 2021. I don't think that's such an uncommon thing we're seeing at the moment, working on a number of buy-ins at the moment.
Yeah, definitely, Chris. I feel like we've ramped up in recent years, lots of different buy-ins and buyouts I'm involved in at the moment. I just think, Charlotte, picking up from your figures, it's so interesting that that means that the majority of DB schemes are still open to accrual, because that's not a trend that I would have thought.
Yeah, so whilst we've got a maturing market, there's still still schemes that are yet to reach full maturity or a very mature status. Charlotte, what other trends are we talking about at the moment?
So another trend is definitely defined benefit super funds. And as you all know, Clara Pensions was the first super fund to meet the regulator standards at the end of last year. So this means that it can start accepting transfers. And taking a little bit of a step back, super funds are schemes designed to consolidate DB assets and liabilities. And this is generally for unconnected employers. So all the assets and liabilities will be put into a single pension arrangement. And if a super fund is gone into, then this will break the link between the original employer. So this means that the scheme won't be able to benefit from the covenant of the original employer and also the ongoing contributions of the company. And this very much means that member security will be relied upon from a capital provided by external advisors, and these investors will hope to reach a profit in due course.
So these super funds can be seen as a win-win, really. So in the right circumstances, the idea is that the member gets the benefit from being in a larger scheme with an increased chance of full benefits, while the employer itself can walk away from its pensions liabilities. So Charlotte, do you think these will take off in the market?
Well, I'm certainly no Mystic Meg, but I definitely heard rumblings in the industry that these could take off. At present, the DWP is aiming to set out its vision for the future regulation of super funds. And I also note that the regulator published its interim regime for super funds in June 2020 and updated its gateway principles in October last year. And this is very much for schemes that are considering consolidation, and will help to ensure the market developed in a controlled manner before legislation is introduced. And also, interestingly, in May last year, the regulator put super funds on its first year's agenda of its three-year plan. So I think it's very much watch this space in this sphere. Perhaps an alternative to buy-ins in the future or pension protection for an entry. And there's also other capital-backed options that are coming through in the market too.
Thanks, Charlotte. I think that CLARA being the first super fund is a big step forward as it gives another options to employers and savers, and it is innovative. Also, trustees could take some comfort that the regulator considers CLARA meets its standard, which is a powerful message, but it's also worth reminding trustees who are listening that they still need to do their own due diligence when choosing a provider.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're right that it's important for trustees to come to their own decisions on solutions for the scheme. But certainly anything that, as you say, Charlotte, anything that improves member options and gives another solution has got to be a good thing for the market. And I've certainly had clients asking, for information about CLARA and how super funds and things like that work. So, yeah. Extra options for the market is definitely a good thing, and I think there is potential for these to take off. But leaving that aside, now over to the main thing we wanted to talk about for this episode. So Charlotte, what about trends in the DC world?
So there is definitely a clear trend on the DC side for schemes to go into master trust, and I have been working on a number of projects in recent times that have seen this happening, and I think, yeah, again, this is very much a trend that is set to continue. And yeah, we'll be talking about this later on as well.
About collective DC schemes. Charlotte, could you explain what they are for our listeners?
Yeah, so this is a new type of trust-based scheme. It's very much a halfway house between defined benefit and defined contribution. So it works. So the member will place contributions into the arrangement and the employer will put in contributions as well. This will then be invested and pooled with other member contributions, and the member will receive a pension when they come to retire. However, this pension will not be guaranteed, and it could be higher or lower depending on how investments have done. So this deviates from the traditional DB model where individuals are guaranteed a pension and potentially more employer contributions would be required. So collective defined contribution schemes were covered in the Pension Schemes Act 2021. And in December last year, the DWP published its response on the consultation on the regulations. And this came along with the final regulations as well. And we are expecting this to come into force in April this year.
So there's certainly been a lot of movement in this space. But Charlotte, do you think these will take off in the market and be an option for members?
Well, yes, definitely. But I do think it's harder potentially on small arrangements where it might be more difficult to benefit from investment pooling. But I can see potentially it taking off on an industry-wide schemes or through aggregator models that could be set up. It could also potentially be an option for the public sector if a government had an appetite to do this. So again, I think this is very much watch this space.
Well, thank you, Charlotte. That was a really helpful summary of collective defined contribution schemes. But today we want to focus the podcast on master trusts, specifically DC master trusts. Could you remind our listeners, please, what a master trust is?
Certainly, Chris. So a master trust is an occupational pension scheme that generally provides defined contribution benefits and usually for unconnected employers.
Thanks, Charlotte. I've definitely seen more and more of my clients wanting to move their DC sections into a master trust, wanting to explore that option. Just for our listeners, the benefits include economies of scale for members and also the fact that they're dedicated DC trust schemes, so therefore removing the ever-increasing DC governance requirements for trustees. What kind of legal issues do you typically see and how can they be overcome?
So I'm very much going to consider this from a trustee perspective if a sponsoring employer puts a proposal to the trustees. And the considerations will depend on whether the master trust is being used for the future accrual of benefits or whether it's transferring benefits that have already been accrued. Or sometimes both, and I worked on a project last year where both happened. And I very much see the decision-making process falling into two categories. The first one is, could the trustees decide to agree to a proposal? And the second one is, should they agree to the proposal? And this will vary depending on whether it's being used for future accrual or the transfer of accrued benefits.
So that's an interesting question for trustees that they'll need to think through before transferring DC benefits to a master trust. Can you tell us a bit more about what you've seen about how trustees go about that decision-making process, Charlotte?
Certainly, and just to chip in there, I think this could even become more important in due course now. There's new value for money requirements for schemes under £100 million. So I think that's worth bearing in mind as well. So yes, as I mentioned, if it's being, depending on what the master trust has been used for. So if it is being used for future accrual of benefits, then consideration will need to be given as to how the original scheme can be closed to future accrual. And it's outside of the scope of this podcast to go into detail about that, but worth obviously considering methodology and also the statutory consultation requirements.
Yeah, but and often I was just going to add, Charlotte, often the original scheme will be close to accrual already, so not always something to have to think about.
Yes, definitely agree with that, Chris. So turning on to the could side for the transfer of accrued benefits, this is usually okay to satisfy. So I think the first step is to have a look at the scheme rules to see if there's a bulk transfer rule that allows the transfer of members' benefits without their consent. And if there isn't one, then it should be fairly easy to insert one subject to any restrictions on the amendment power. So that is one aspect of it. Then you need to look at the legislation requirements and helpfully a automatic gateway for transfers to authorised master trust was introduced a few years ago. So this allows the transfer to go ahead without needing an actuary certificate, which helps to simplify the process. Worth pointing out that there's also notice requirements, so members have to be given a month's notice of the transfer without their consent, and this needs to be factored into any project plan. It's also worth saying that careful consideration needs to be given to the type of benefits that are going across, because it needs to come within the definition of relevant money purchase benefits. So for example, if you have ABCs with profits, then this may not come within that definition and an actuary certificate may be required. And this may also cause a few issues if those type of benefits were to go into the master trust in terms of the benefits that could be provided on the transfer.
Are they common with profits ABCs, would you say, Charlotte? Or are they something you see from time to time? Have they propped up on your transactions?
Well, it's not something that I see on all my transfers that I've done, but it's certainly cropped up on some that I have done in the past. So yeah, definitely something to consider.
Thanks, Charlotte. And turning to the should now, what are some things that trustees should think about when deciding to move their DC sections into a master trust?
So this does need to be given some thought, because although, as I mentioned, there is an automatic gateway to authorise master trust, this doesn't necessarily mean that trustees should come to a foregone conclusion that this is the best thing to do. So trustees will need to consider their fiduciary duties, particularly thinking about acting in the best interest of the beneficiaries. And also an important aspect of this is taking advice. So this will include investment and legal advice and really having a good audit trail of the factors that they've considered, the advice they've taken before coming to the conclusion that they've decided to reach. And it may be that they do reach the conclusion that it's best to go into the master trust, but this shouldn't be an automatic decision. And it is possible that alternatives could also be considered.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's probably a few different considerations for trustees. Charlotte, can you let us know your top tips?
Yeah, so I think one of my top tips is in relation to tax protections and the use of taking your pension commencement lump sum. I talk about tax protections, I'm talking about individuals with protected pension ages or protected A-Day cash. And this is an interesting one, because if it's a hybrid scheme, the original scheme, and there's a transfer of the DC section, then the benefit of that protection could be lost because there's a separation of benefits. Although, just to note, that it seems like potentially the new type of protected pension age, the protection wouldn't be lost. So clearly, it may be the members do want to continue to take their pension before normal minimum pension age or benefit from their protected AIDA cash. So a mechanism that I've seen work on quite a few occasions is to allow the individual to transfer back their pot of retirement. And to do this, you'll need to make sure the rules are clear allowing this to happen. And also think about the form the benefits will take and where the amounts will be held. And also to see whether, when the transfer does come back, whether the DC governance will have to be complied with. And yes, so similar principles will also apply for individuals who can use their DC pot towards their PCLS. And thought also needs to be given to those who have lifetime allowance protections. For example, whether this would fall within a permitted transfer.
So the headline principle of letting members transfer their DC pots back in to fund their pension commencement lump sum, is sort of straightforward in the headline terms, but there's a number of bits and pieces to think about as you put that mechanism into action. Would you say that sounds like what I'm hearing?
Yes, definitely. And I worked on a very interesting case last year where this was being considered, and particularly from the DC governance requirements, trying to ensure that the benefit of going to the master trust and not having to do the DC requirements is carried through. So just trying to get a balance between allowing members the flexibility to what they want to do with their benefits, but also sure that the correct channels have gone through.
Yeah, absolutely. And what would your other tips be, would you say?
So my second one would be in terms of monitoring the master trust. So it's important that obviously this continues to be fit for purpose. And this is very much should be an employer's role rather than the trustee's role. And so one of the key elements to this is checking that the rules of the master trust have sufficient termination provisions to allow smooth exit. And although the trustees wouldn't necessarily be involved with the decision-making process, it may be that they need to help facilitate the transfer back to the original scheme. So that is one aspect. Another aspect is in terms of trustee protection. And this is important because if a claim were ever to be made against the trustees and you're essentially left with a shell of a DC section or a shell of a scheme, then there wouldn't necessarily be the assets to protect the trustees. So it's worth thinking about if there's not a current indemnity from the sponsoring employer, whether one should be asked for, and also whether it's appropriate to take out separate insurance. It's worth noting that if the original scheme was not a segregated scheme, then it may also be possible to benefit from the assets of that section as well. So that's something to consider as well.
The commingling of assets between different sections is an interesting thing in its own right, isn't it? Probably outside the scope of this podcast, but commingling of assets between sections has its own host of legal issues to think through before trustees necessarily allow that. Sorry, you were just coming on to your last top tip there.
Yes, and this is on investment mapping and cost. So noting that there is no requirement to take investment advice, where existing accounts are being mapped to different funds in the master trust, consideration should be given to how this is done and appropriate advice taken, particularly with regards to any potential losers and any steps taken to mitigate any investment risks such as pre-funding.
Yeah, absolutely. Investment advice, absolutely, or thinking about investment, absolutely key to the whole process. So, Charlotte, thank you for coming on the podcast and sharing your expertise with us. And to our listeners, if you've enjoyed listening and think a DC transfer to a master trust might be something of interest, then we'd be delighted to discuss options further with you.
Thank you for listening to the Burgessauer Pensions Pod. If you'd like to know more about our pensions team and how our experts can work with you, you can contact myself, Chris, or any of our team via our website. All of our episodes are available on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe, and thanks for listening.